For more information, you can call the Matt's Bus System at 231-722-6048.
Call 722-8338 right now to ask the judge a question. It's the Judge Show on 103.7 The Beat. It's the Judge Show with Judge Pittman. Judge Pittman on WUVS 103.7 The Beat.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Honorable Judge Pittman Radio Show brought to you by Grand Valley State University. In the studio, the one and only 10-year radio veteran, Michigan State grad, Indiana University, Hikes alum,
yes,
Omega Sci-Fi, extraordinary, legendary, Gober Washington protege on the saxophone.
Oh, man.
The one and only.
Wow.
Gregory C. Pittman. How you doing today, sir?
Oh, man. I'm I am, man, you set me out there, brother.
I know you like the Grover Washington one.
Yeah, I love the Grover. I absolutely love the Grover thing. Boy, if I could play like that for 10, 15 seconds, I'd be happy.
Well, today, coming up in about 25 minutes, Congressman Bill Heisinger is going to be calling in. And folks, this is not Judge Pittman endorsement of Bill Heisinger. We know this. He is our congressperson, and he scheduled to do it earlier,
right?
And he got flight got delayed, and one of these things that we realize a community station, when you're a congressperson, want to be on radio.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Yes, you make room. Absolutely,
because they are our voice in Washington D.C.
Absolutely, and I know it. It is not an endorsement by any stretch. I do know Congressman Heisinger.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to be really quiet, and I'm going to let you have your conversation with him. It's a very interesting time to be speaking with him,
right,
considering the vote that has come out of committee to begin a petition for contempt proceedings against the United States Attorney General Eric Holder.
And I don't know, what did all that stuff mean? Because the documents got executive privileges, but they can go on and carry on contempt charges.
Well, what they are, it's a whole lot more than we can really see. But the basics of it is that they are this chairman ISA is alleging that the attorney general has been too reticent, too slow in his response to the subpoena information from that congressional committee. And the congressional committees have subpoena power. They have the power to require testimony and documents as they see fit. The attorney general, the way I understand it, has submitted thousands of pages of documents and has refused to submit certain documents that he believed were would compromise information that should remain confidential. Confidential informant information. And maybe some covert operator type information where people's safety and the safety of some of the operations would be compromised. And he's got a right to do that. And the president came in and sort of backed him up with his invoking what's called executive privilege. The attorney general's office is part of the executive branch of the United States government, which comes under the auspices of the president of the United States. He works under the president, and the president is saying that these documents are executive branch material that is protected by the privilege that is extended to the executive branch through precedent and through, I believe, statute. So the congressman who's chairing this committee has made it a point that he's going to push through anyway. Basically, he's saying, I'm not asserting that you don't have executive privilege. I am asserting that these documents don't fall under that particular protection. Mm-hmm. And because he's taken so long and has been so reticent and we've been patient, he's claiming that he's been asked for this stuff for over a year. We are now at the point where our patience has run thin. You are not in compliance with a congressional subpoena. Mm-hmm. And you are now in contempt of this in contempt of Congress. That's a big charge.
Right.
That's a tremendously large charge in the history of the United States. The way I understand it, there has never been an attorney general who has been held in contempt for exercising the prerogatives of his office as attorney general. Even back in the Nixon White House or Nixon Watergate campaign violations that were going on to the extent that they were, the Attorney General Mitchell, who was complicit in some of the cover-up. I mean, he was in it up to his neck in the cover-ups that took place that eventually caused the president to resign his office, wasn't held in contempt of Congress.
Wow.
he was involved in a plot and a plan and a proceeding that caused the president to say, I have to quit because I'm so caught up in illegal activity.
Wow.
And he didn't get held in contempt.
But so Eric Holder's get contempt charges.
Yeah.
They
at least they're starting the process. Technically, he is not yet held in contempt. They have voted in committee to recommend to Congress as a whole to take up the vote to hold him in contempt and begin those contempt proceedings.
Do that mean if the vote carries in Congress that he would no longer be attorney general?
No, that's not what that would mean at that point. Actually, what that would mean is that they would then have to proceed with the contempt hearings. They're still not in contempt. It would then require them to prove what it is that he has done that is contemptuous.
Okay.
And even if he's found in contempt, that does not necessarily abrogate him from his position as attorney general. But it does put him in position. It does expose him to that, as well as being incarcerated until he purges that contempt.
Wow.
Politics at its worst.
Wow.
I mean, what does this have to do with my mortgage, with thousands and millions of jobs,
right,
with people needing health care, food stamps to be resolved, with the debt ceiling needing to be addressed once again?
Mm-hmm.
You name it, any number of issues that Congress could be spending its time on to try and get people's lives, to help people's lives to become better. And they are concerned because the attorney general is invoking his prerogative. And they want to put him in jail. It's ridiculous.
What I see from the Democrats is saying, Pelosi had said that this is a distraction. They're trying to distract Eric Holder from dealing with the voter rights issues.
Well, it one thing I did see is that there was not I don't think he's a representative. I think he's a senator from Texas, a guy named Cornyn, who Eric Holder was testifying in front of. And he spoke out and basically said that he thought that Eric Holder should resign his position and that he did not agree, or that Eric Holder was wrong for his efforts in addressing the issue of voter suppression. No, voter roll purging that was going on in Florida, apparently in violation of standard procedure. What's that got to do? I mean, he was before them on the issue of this gun buy program.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's that got to do with voter issues?
Right.
He betrayed. He let out of his mouth what he really thought about this thing. I really want to see you get jammed up because I don't like the fact that you are trying to stop Florida from purging people off of these voting rolls. It's, you know, the politics are just way, way, way out of hand. It's gotten ridiculous. And the attempt appears to me to be to try to tie this back to and impugn the integrity, the character, and the management of the president's office by the president.
That's what you're
trying to tie it all back to. Yeah. Everybody is a crook in the Obama administration, and Obama is the reason why.
Wow. This is just the beginning. Yeah, it's not. We got a long way to go.
This could drag out, you know, and it appears that it's going to be very partisan. So there are going to be a lot of votes on long party lines. At some point, both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans, they both have to figure out how to break out of party ranks and partisanship and do what is the right thing to do in that particular issue, whatever that issue is.
Is that possible? It don't seem to be
possible. Used to happen.
Yeah.
Used to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never seen it like this since since President Obama took office. And I think it becomes easy to do. I think it's become an easier thing to do. Because in addition to the rough and tumble partisanship of politics in Washington, you've got the added element that the president is a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'd say it to anybody that it becomes a little easier to begin to disrespect, to dismiss, to marginalize, to question the integrity and the competence of the president because he is a black man.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who will buy into what's going on because if for no other reason, some of them believe that this black man just is not qualified to be president.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to whatever his, you know, whatever his shortcomings may be, simply as the president,
mm-hmm.
the added element is that there are some who just hold the belief that black folks aren't qualified to do certain things.
Wow. Judge Pittman is here. If you got any questions or comments for the Honorable Judge Pittman, today was Father's Day.
Yeah. Only one today.
Only one.
Only one.
That didn't show up.
Only one didn't show up.
Wow.
But I only had maybe four or five on the docket. So.
Okay.
So the percentage is still roughly the same.
Okay. Okay. Well, congratulations to the one.
Yeah.
Slept through it.
Yeah, bro.
Probably had mandatory overtime, the job.
Yeah. We could go with that. We could go with that.
Yeah. But you got any questions for the judge? Anything new?
Yes. Hot.
You got some hot?
Got a hot one for you.
Okay.
The governor just signed, I think, last week or early or late the week before, new legislation regarding paternity issues. And specifically, the main provision of that is that here's the way the law stands now. If a woman is married and has a child while she is married, the law presumes that that child's father, the legal father of that child, is the husband.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they are separated and estranged from one another or not.
Right.
That man automatically becomes the legal father, not the biological father, obviously,
right,
possibly, but the legal father.
Mm-hmm.
New legislation has been passed and it is immediately in effect that now, instead of that being simply the presumption and it being virtually impossible to overcome that presumption,
mm-hmm.
the mother, the husband or the presumptive legal father, or the man, a man who alleges that he is the biological father, can file to have the matter heard and a determination made by the court as to who is the legal father.
Mm.
And that's a good step.
Right.
I think that's a very, very, very good step.
And this person will start to have the rights.
Yes. Once they can go to court, they can take the necessary steps to prove that they should be considered the legal father. And most likely that's based upon the idea that they are the biological father. And so as opposed to some man who had nothing really to do with this child coming mm-hmm. into the earth,
mm-hmm.
but by virtue of still being recognized at law anyway as married to this woman,
mm-hmm.
he's the legal father of a child.
Right.
Required to pay child support and all of the other requirements that would be recognized as a person who is the father of a child.
Wow. This could be, for certain folks, a game changer.
This is a tremendous game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And because now the biological father does not have to wait for somebody else to try to take that step. He doesn't have to wait for the agreement or the acquiescence of the mother
mm-hmm.
To go in and basically agree and have that status changed. He can take that step on his own.
Because that mother might be embarrassed.
She could be embarrassed. She could. I've had cases where I know the consideration was simply the idea of who is more financially able to be of benefit to the mother and that child.
So the mother's married,
mm-hmm.
had a baby outside of the marriage,
mm-hmm.
and the decision that who makes the most money is the father.
Well, what happened is that the presumption is that husband
is the father.
Is the father.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that could be overturned under the way things used to exist was if the mother and the biological father were in agreement in the action to convince the court to vacate the husband as the legal father mm-hmm. and replace him with the biological father.
Mm-hmm.
That woman may have as a ulterior motive. Well, I don't think it is the husband's baby, but I'm not agreeing to go in and do anything to change this because I can get more money out of this guy, the mm-hmm. husband, than
the guy on the side,
than the guy that I was kicking it around with and right. wound up pregnant by.
Right. Wow.
He was wow. good for a thrill, but he ain't going to pay no
right.
support.
So the husband stuck.
And the husband is stuck.
And so, he might not even know.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Or he may know.
Or may know.
He may, you know, he knows, hey, I touched you. You have, you know, we stopped that a long time ago. But he's stuck now going through the very long, difficult drug out and not guaranteed process of trying to convince the court to have him vacated as the legal father.
Wow.
It's expensive, it's costly, it's time consuming, and it's not always guaranteed that that's going to be the outcome.
So this is a good bill.
I think this is a good step. Yeah. I think in the long run, it's a good step. It's certainly going to, like anything else, it has the potential to be misused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got the potential to create confusion and to be used in a offensive way as opposed to being used as a means to get to ultimately to truths. But ultimately it will get to the truth.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Take a break, come back. Honorable Judge Pittman is in the studio. If you got a question for the judge, 231-722-8338. We're gonna be should be talking to the congressman coming up in a few minutes. That's going to be interesting, Judge, to see. Have you ruled on money? They just got signed Tuesday.
Yeah, it just went into effect. So I have not seen one of those petitions yet, but I would dare say it shan't be long.
So this is a common issue.
It's more common than people would probably appreciate. Yes. I would say it's more common than you would expect.
Man.
Yeah.
Hearing that.
Mother's baby, daddy's maybe.
And then you had told me that there are cases which the mother don't know who the father is.
Sure.
It's just process elimination.
Sure. Oh, yeah. There's a few of those. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
You can write a book.
Yeah, you know, there's plenty of material. There is plenty of material.
Ah.
I'm not that guy, but there is plenty of material.
Be right back. The Honorable Judge Pittman Radio Show.
Call 722-8338 right now to ask the judge a question. It's the Judge Show on 103.7 The Beat.
This hour of WBS LP is brought to you by Cole's Bakery, specializing in a complete line of frozen garlic bread products, from loaves of soft garlic bread to savory toasts, garlic mini loaves, cheese and pizza sticks, and more. Offering meals from the freezer to your table in under 10 minutes. Cole's products are available in supermarkets and convenience stores across the country. The slogan is, always tasteful. Anywhere bread goes, Cole's goes better. For more information on products, the website is www.cole's.com. Cole's Bakery is a proud supporter of your community station, 103.7 The Beat.
This hour of WUBS programming is brought to you by ALT Property Management. ALT Property Management has a huge selection of rental property throughout Muskegon. ALT Property Management with houses from one-bedroom to huge four-bedroom houses available for immediate occupancy. ALT Property Management can be reached at 231-798-6430. ALT Property Management slogan is, we have the perfect place for the potential tenant. They are locally owned and operated. They are proud supporters of your community station, 103.7 The Beat.
This hour of WUVS programming is brought to you by Jar Inc. McDonald's, owners of your local McDonald's restaurants in the Muskegon area, featuring the 30 days of specials at the new Norton McDonald's. Every day there is a special on the menu. Also featuring Cherry Berry Chiller, Strawberry Lemonade, New Rolo McFlurry, and S'mores Pie. Also featuring Happy Meals for the Kids, plus a full menu at every restaurant. Jar Inc. McDonald's is locally owned and operated. For more information, please visit the website at www.mcdonalds.com. McDonald's slogan is, I'm loving it. Jar Inc. McDonald's is now a proud supporter of your community station, 103.7.
This is Dr. Kalisha Morin, Dental Director for Muskegon Family Care Dental, and we would like to remind you of the importance of having a dental home for your child. As a parent, you're in the driver's seat when it comes to the health of your kids' teeth. We encourage parents to bring their children in when the first tooth appears or no later than their first birthday. So that way we can not only screen for early concerns, but also help your child feel more comfortable in the dental office. Healthy dental habits are easy for a child to learn when taught from the very beginning. So help protect your child's beautiful smile by making dental care part of your child's daily routine and scheduling dental visits every 6 months. Every child deserves a healthy start in life. Contact Muskegon Family Care Dental at 767-9830 and make your child an appointment today. We are also here to help with dental care during pregnancy and offer dental emergency appointments. Call us today for complete details.
Call 722-8338 right now to ask the judge a question. It's the Judge Show on 103.7 The Beat. It's the Judge Show with Judge Pittman. Judge Pittman on WUVS 103.7 The Beat.
Welcome back to the Honorable Judge Pittman Radio Show, brought to you by Grand Valley State University. We're going on to the phone line. We got Congressman Bill Heisinger on the phone line, our congressman in Washington, D.C. How you doing today, Congressman Heisinger?
Hey, we're doing well, Paul, and Judge Pittman. I'm glad to be on the show with you too.
How you doing, Bill? Haven't talked to you in quite a while, but hope things are going well with you.
Yeah, we're doing well, and likewise with you up there.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, I know you only got a few minutes, so I want to ask you quite a few things. Well, a few things here. explain to us this Supreme Court ruling that could be coming down this week on health care. I think they got some things that's pending on immigration. What can happen over the next couple of days that could change America?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. You know, what could happen that's going to change America? A lot. And this is traditional. The Supreme Court will take a bunch of hearings, and then they kind of take a 2-3 month period here where they write all these opinions. They're very secretive about it. They don't tell you when anything's coming out. They have sort of suspected dates. We know that the earliest that they're going to release anything is next week. Again, is going to be next week Monday.
Okay.
So either next week Monday or sometime next week, we may hear about the ruling on the Affordable Care Act. But there's been a number of other things. Today there was a big ruling out regarding union dues and some of those things. So it's a period where the Supreme Court's releasing a lot of opinions right now.
Okay.
So what can happen next week or whenever the Supreme Court decides to release this finding on the Affordable Care Act, they could do one of a couple of things. One, they could leave the law standing exactly the way it is, and it would be moving forward and being implemented, and would be the law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they could do is they could find that the requirement that every individual buy insurance, that individual mandate is what it's called, is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find that that's unconstitutional, one of two things can happen in there. They could say that you can take that piece of it out and let the rest of the law stand, meaning it's severable, or you can sort of clip it out of there and leave everything else in place. Or it would be non-detachable. And if they find that unconstitutional, but that they can't pull that section out of the law, then the entire law would fall and would be deemed unenforceable. And so that is something that is going to be huge. Most court watchers believe that one of the last two things is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That they'll find that individual mandate unconstitutional, but that they will either allow the rest of the law to stand or that the rest of the law will have to go away. Either way, frankly, Paul, we're gonna have a lot of work on our hands after that. You know, for me personally, I don't believe just returning to the status quo is success. We've got to come up with some different directions to go with our health care that cover seniors, that cover kids, that cover you know, people that either are struggling to afford it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a number of things that we need to do, and either way, I think you're going to see a little bit longer process. You know, the Speaker Pelosi was sort of famous for saying, "Well, we had to pass that bill, that 2,700 page bill.
Mm-hmm.
We had to pass it to find out what was in it."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that sits very well with the American people, and certainly doesn't sit very well with me. And so, yeah, before I'm going too far down the road on that, I want to read the Supreme Court opinion myself personally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And make sure I understand it as well. But someone compared this to sort of like the elections in Greece. We know something big's going to happen. We just don't know what it is, and how exactly that's going to influence and affect the country is kind of a big question mark.
Right. Have we studied other countries and see what worked best in other countries?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people over the years that have looked at you know, whether it's Canada or Latin America or Europe. The analogy with the Greek election is just that something big that's going to influence the country is about to happen. We just don't know what the outcome is going to be yet coming out of the Supreme Court.
Okay, right. On the phone line, Congressman Bill Heisinger, our congressman in Washington D.C. on the phone line. Let's talk about Muskegon here. Some things that people are waiting to happen in Muskegon. There is a tribe that's been patiently waiting. They're at the top of the ladder for the Indian Affairs Division, Bureau of Indian Affairs. I hope I get the word right, but they're at the top.
Yep.
They've been waiting for a determination now probably about 10 months. Do you got any inroads? Do you got any clues of what might be going on there? That could be a huge game changer here in Muskegon.
Yeah, and I do know that sort of reaction to the casino is a bit mixed in the people that I talk to in Muskegon. Some people feel very strongly that it will dramatically help not just downtown Muskegon but the surrounding areas, all of Muskegon County, and even further down into Ottawa and north up into Oceana and other places. And there's some people that are a little leery of it. You know, they look at it and say, okay, there's going to be job creation, but where is the funding coming from? Is a bit of a concern. So I know there's a lot of mixed reactions, but what I have done is actually continued what my predecessor Peter Hoekstra did, which is put in inquiries on a regular basis into the Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA as it's referenced,
okay.
Asking them, okay, you know, what's the status? And that's basically about what we can do, is ask them, you know, where is this in the process of your review?
Mm-hmm.
And I've now put in, I believe I'm on my second letter, and I've been there about a year and a half, so kind of once a year we've been putting this in. I guess it was probably about 10 months ago that we did the last inquiry on their behalf. And Pete, I know, had put in a number of inquiries as well,
mm-hmm.
just asking, okay, where are you guys? Are you gonna make a decision? And when are you gonna make the decision?
Right.
And that I think is causing a lot of frustration for everybody. It's like, okay, you've got this thing sort of hanging out there.
Right.
Let's get an answer one way or the other as to what's gonna happen is the sense that a lot of people have.
Right. On the phone line, our Congressman Bill Heisinger, on the phone line, I think I mentioned to you off the air about some programs being cut by federal government, community action programs here, severe cuts. Reverend Ken Shelton, CEO there, with his leadership, they have been able to do a lot of things. This past budget, they've seen some historical cuts happen there, and I don't know if you're aware of all that that's going on.
I know that we have met with Reverend Shelton and Karen Bowie and some other people in the past, and quite honestly, it'd be good for me to get back in touch with them personally to hear a little more recent account of how that's been affecting them, and we're in a tough spot all the way around. Whether it's in defense spending or whether it's community programs, whether it's education, whether it's highway transportation funding, we're in a spot where we don't have the revenues that we would like to have to be able to support a lot of these programs. And the main thing on that, Paul, is getting economic activity back in place, getting companies like Eagle Alloy and Port City and a number of these others that are out manufacturing and doing a lot of that stuff, get them out hiring, get them out, making things, and that's when they've got the ability to go in and pay taxes and that kind of stuff. So, the real key here is getting some economic activity because, as we see more people getting back to work, demand on some of those social services will go down, and that's the other thing is you're seeing more people accessing or requesting these programs that they need, which then is diluting the money from other areas as you're trying to cover that. So it's a difficult spot that we're in as a country, but we've got to make sure that that old phrase of throwing the baby out with the bathwater here.
Right.
You know, we've got to make sure that we're holding on to those programs that work, which is one of the reasons why, frankly, I'm not a real fan of these across-the-board cuts where they would say, okay, we're gonna cut 10 or 15% of all federal spending, and because what that does is it leaves programs that aren't, frankly, all that effective and aren't doing that much. It leaves them in place just at a reduced amount, mm-hmm. and it then takes the good programs and it reduces their effectiveness. And you know, it's really we've got to do some more work on prioritizing what those are.
Right. I had a question. I know you're a Republican, and that seems to be Republicans and Democrats don't seem to agree on too much. Is there anything that that the Republicans and the Democrats do agree on, and we can get that work done? And are there things that maybe we don't hear about that you two agree on, and that's happening?
Yeah, now you're getting close right there, because you know I'm sure this isn't much of a surprise, but the media doesn't like it when we agree too much.
Okay.
Because they have less to report on, right?
Right.
I mean they want to report on the blood being spilt in the streets of of Washington as we're all going after each other and beating each other up,
right.
And there's plenty of that happens. And I'll say this too: it's not because there's Republicans and Democrats. It's because there's different philosophies of how do you have a successful country and a state. And there's just some competing ideas of how we do that, but. Nonetheless, there are some things. In fact, I've had a bill that passed the committee that I'm on. It's called Financial Services.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bill that Barney Frank and Carol Maloney and Luis Gutierrez and Mel Watts and a number of others on that committee all voted for, went through the House of Representatives unanimously, having to do with some banking laws on privacy. We had another series of bills that President Obama signed into law called the Jobs Act. This was back a few months ago.
Okay.
They passed the House, they passed the Senate. Frankly, getting the Senate to do much of anything these days has been difficult, and they are doing some work. In fact, today the Senate passed a bipartisan farm bill. Now, we say farm or ag bill,
mm-hmm.
But it's a bit of a misnomer. 80% of all the spending in the farm bill actually has to do with food programs.
Okay.
Whether it's school, whether it's SNAP, whether it's basically aid to dependent children, a number of WIC, all these other programs that are all wrapped up into it. And so that was a strong vote out of the Senate. The House is going to be dealing with that in the next couple of weeks. So there are a few things, not everything, and right. Frankly, not enough. You do also see a bit more agreement on some of the foreign policy things that are out there as we're dealing, whether it's with Russia or the Middle East or Syria. The media certainly likes to see us beating each other over the head, and they tend to highlight that.
Right. On the phone line, Congressman Bill Heisinger is on the phone line. That's a couple more questions. The poor, we never hear too much about poor. When people campaign, and Republicans and Democrats, we hear middle class all the time. Rarely do we hear about those 30, 40 million Americans that are poor. Do you understand why? Do you know the reason why that's never mentioned? Because they vote.
Yeah, they do. And, again, I think that is, so much of what we say out in Washington, gets filtered through, and there's only a small portion of it that actually gets reported. And I know,
mm-hmm.
and I've been pretty vocal about this, and as we've been going through some of these cuts to some good programs even, and tough programs,
right.
One of the things that I've been saying is that we can't just depend on the government for that safety net, and it's up to people like me and like you and like Judge Pittman and everybody else that we have to step into the breach. We have to step into that gap in our own communities, and whether it's working with a homeless shelter, or whether it's working with Salvation Army, whether it's a number of these other programs and organizations that are filling the gap, not just for the truly you know, poor and unemployed, but also for the working poor.
Right.
And you know, the underemployment part of this is something that I think is talked about quite a bit.
Right.
You know, and it gets back to, again, I think sort of that job creation model. You know, we've got to make sure that someone who had been, you know, having a good 15 dollar an hour job at a manufacturing center, who's now making, you know, $8 or $9 an hour and maybe on a part-time basis, has an opportunity to go back to that type of manufacturing job. That is something that is on the top of mind and something that we talk about on a regular basis. It's just not always picked up about it. But, you know, when I do interviews like this one, you know, on other radio stations,
right,
we'll get asked about that. And that's something that's got to stay out in the open as well.
Okay. Another thing, I guess, the Fast and Furious. That seems to be the popular conversation right now. It's been reported that you has no faith in Attorney General Eric Holder due to the Fast and Furious program. Is that true?
This is a very, very serious problem. And here's the problem. Attorney General Holder has been asked by Congress, and Congress, you have to understand, Congress has the same powers just like Judge Pittman has, where he can subpoena somebody. He can force and compel someone to either produce documents or to come and testify.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress has that same ability, and when they don't do that, you know, Judge Pittman can throw them in jail. Or one of the others can. We can't quite do that, but we can hold them in, after he holds them in contempt of court, we can do something called holding them in contempt of Congress. And what that pretty clearly has been, in my opinion, the Fast and Furious program was a, frankly, Paul, a dumb idea that that someone, and we don't know who, someone came up with, mm-hmm, that said, okay, we know we've got a lot of problems with guns on the border, the Mexican-U.S. border, with all the drug cartels that are down there. We're going to put 1,000 guns into circulation. We're going to give them and sell them into these drug cartels. And then we're going to track them and see where they show up, so we can track the people who have been using them. Well, problem is they lost track of 80% of them, and one of those guns was used to kill a border agent, a guy named Brian Terry, and there's been a number of other of the guns that have shown up on various crime scenes, but. You know, seeing Officer Terry be killed, that was really the most serious one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Justice has not been forthcoming, and Attorney General Holder had come before Congress and had said that while there really was no information on this and he didn't know about it, he then had to go back a couple of weeks later after investigating and digging around, discovered that, yes, in fact, that there were these memos and there were these emails and different things that were out there. He had to come back and say, oh, well, I guess I was wrong about that. It is out there, but we're not going to share it with you anyway. And that's one of the constitutional powers that Congress has. Regardless, this has nothing to do with party or philosophy or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
This has to do with the constitutional powers that Congress has for oversight for some of these departments.
Right.
You know, if we thought NASA was doing a bad job launching rockets, we have a responsibility to go in there and force NASA to explain to us what they're doing. If we think that the Department of Education or Department of Labor is doing a bad job in something, you know, we've got a constitutional obligation to go in and say, you have to explain this to us. What is going on here? And to have Attorney General Holder refuse to do that is really, in my mind, unacceptable. And we've got to make sure that we have an open and transparent. I'm not expecting him to give any national secrets.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're asking. But the fear is that they're trying to cover it up for fear of some embarrassment. Well, you know, we had somebody that lost their life, and a federal agent lost their life over this. And we've got to make sure that this never happens again. And in the meantime, we've got all these guns that have been out there sanctioned by the federal, our own federal government, that helped put them into circulation. And that it's a serious breach. So there's going to be another opportunity for the Department of Justice to come forward with some documents. And we'll see. Hopefully, hopefully we can reach some agreement.
Wow. In the near future, are you going to be having time to meet with some of the leaders here in the Muskegon area? As you see, I know this is not a federal issue, but one of our school districts pretty much almost dissolving and is going to be ran by a charter school. That is making history in America. I don't know if you had a chance to even meet with some of the local leaders as to what the federal role could do, or talk to them about your concern, because this is something that's never happened in across America, Muskegon Heights.
Well, there have been a couple of there's been a couple of instances, Milwaukee and a few other schools where they have done some similar things. I'm not sure that this has been done in Michigan before. I think this is kind of new territory. It is, as you point out, a predominantly a state issue that the governor and the legislature have to deal with, and with the emergency manager. We have been getting briefed on that, and we have been sort of up to speed. I think it's a very difficult situation for everybody, and I don't think anybody wants to see it this way. In fact, I know, former Superintendent Dana pretty well, and I know he didn't want to see any of this type of thing happening either. So, I've got a lot of hay on my fork when it comes to our issues in Washington, and I want to be properly engaged, but I want to make sure that the people of Muskegon Heights have input as to what's going on and how this is going to be held. But that's really a state and local issue that needs to get worked through. But we'll continue to meet with people on that.
Well, thank you for being available. If people want to get your updates, how can they get your updates?
Yeah, they can go and go to my website. It's Huizenga, Huizenga, at house.gov. And that's not a campaign site or anything else. That's just all official information, and they can sign up to get our newsletter, and certainly we've got the office in Muskegon that is open and available as well downtown, and we'd love to make sure we hear from people.
All right. Well, thank you for being available. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey.
I just sat quietly. This is valuable time, and I was glad to be able to hear what you had to say, Congressman. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Your Honor, it's good to be with you, and I would love to catch up in person again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right.
Look forward
right.
to it.
All right, take care, Congressman. Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All
have
right.
a great weekend.
All right,
right. Bye-bye.
All right. There you go, Congressman Bill Huizenga in Washington, D.C.
Very nice guy, though. He's a good guy. He's a nice guy. Very nice guy.
This time went quick. His term is already up.
Well, that every 2 year thing, man, is rough.
And I guess he don't have an opponent. So
really, so far,
so. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think so. Yeah, he's unopposed, so he's not. He don't have to worry about it.
Now that's surprising. That is absolutely surprising. Well, good for him.
Yeah,
shoot.
You get to relax.
I ain't mad at him.
You're not mad at him, right?
I ain't mad at him.
Sharing his opinion on this Fast and Fury thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be going back and forth, back and forth. It's not going to go away anytime soon.
No, and one of the things he did indicate is that it could still be worked out. It still could be negotiated. And that's, in fact, the way I understood it, that's where Attorney General Holder was, is let's sit down, let's talk about this. Because what he does not want to do, and I don't blame him, I wouldn't blame anybody, is I don't want to turn these things over after we've agreed that these are the documents that are really relevant to your issue, and then get hit with a new subpoena for thousands more documents.
Mm-hmm.
Said, let's sit down. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how the sensitive documents that are involved that I believe are privileged might possibly be able to be shared in the appropriate way. Maybe we redact or, you know, pull out some of the sensitive nature of those documents and able to turn over to you the truncated, the abridged version of those documents or something like that. There's always room to be able to negotiate and reach some agreement. I just get the sense from this chairman of this committee, this ISA from New York, that his interest, while maybe certainly legitimate,
mm-hmm.
are being shadowed and are being colored by the partisan nature of being able to hold these people, especially the president and his attorney general's feet to a artificial fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just get that sense. I don't know if everybody is of that opinion on that committee or that kind of thing, or other Republicans who have voted along party lines that way. I don't know. I can't begin to question that, but mm-hmm. I've seen and taken a measure of him and how he's conducted himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is more in his mind than simply the gathering of information to get to a conclusion. And here's the thing about this Fast and Furious thing, the way I understand it, and I'm not privy to all that others may be privy to, started in the Bush administration.
Okay.
It's a program that began in the Bush administration. It, like a lot of programs, when administrations change, they continue on.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point it came to the attention of the Attorney General and the President. And ultimately, this is the administration, this is the Attorney General who said, stop it. We're not going to do that anymore, because I agree with Congressman Huizenga. It's a dumb approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid. And it's not going to yield the kind of results that would be effective and helpful in the battle of illegal guns and all that kind of thing. But it started in the Bush administration and it ends here with them. And I think ultimately that's what you want done,
right,
is you want it to be ended. And I think a more reasonable inquiry, what would really be helpful, is to determine who is thinking along the lines that this is the kind of a program that the government should be investing itself in, mm-hmm. to get the kinds of really, really jacked up results that we got. Who's thinking like this? Who's responsible for this thought?
Right.
And how do we stop that kind of thinking from ever getting off the ground? We want people to be innovative. We want them to be out front in trying to combat these issues like illegal guns and that kind of thing.
Right.
But we can't be silly about it.
Right, right. Someone knows Judge Son Dusty in his trial. I know you. His adopted son says he was also a victim. He was prepared to testify.
Sandusky's own son?
Adopted son.
Wow.
Yep. Said to attorney that he was also a victim of the former coach's sexual abuse, adding that he had been prepared to testify for the prosecution.
Wow.
So.
This dude, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. Boy. You deal with sex, yes, sex abuse cases, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yep. Tell Judge, what kind of impact happens to the victim when they confide in a parent and the parent don't believe them?
Well, you know, when a person tries to share something that painful and that exposing to somebody that they legitimately should believe has their back,
mm-hmm.
and the response is something other than supportive and corrective and helpful, where else do you go?
Right.
Who else do you tell? If I'm sharing with you something that is as painful and as gut wrenching as being molested, and you can't accept what I've said as truth, or certainly you don't, at least you don't respond in a way that helps me to feel like I made the right decision, well, then who do you tell?
Right.
Who do you turn to? That's got to be a horribly this has got to be a horrific feeling. That's got to feel like there is absolutely nothing left for you.
Wow. Helpless.
Yeah. 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 I wouldn't want to be in that position ever.
And that's why you've been a judge who's always protected the innocent kids.
Yeah, you know, I think there is a term of art and a term of operation that we utilize in the family court, and is that what serves the best interest of children.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, at the bottom of every decision that I'm supposed to make is supposed to be that consideration. Does this decision within the confines of what the law allows serve the best interest of the children? So, yeah, you know, my efforts are geared towards the idea that when people who have the responsibility by nature and by societal norms fail to serve the best interests of children, then we by law must take that mantle up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow. And unfortunately, those kind of cases are happening more than ever.
Yes, they are happening. They're happening all the time, unfortunately. There's way, way too much of that kind of behavior occurring in our society. Mm-hmm.
And there's another side of the story where a lot of people don't even report it.
Yeah. And when I say that it's happening in our society, if I'm seeing the percentages that I'm seeing, then you know that you can probably double what that percentage would be and start to come close to the actual frequency of that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm. We had Lewis Churchwell on, and he called it life altering events.
Absolutely. I don't think that is an overstatement by any stretch. I mean, these are the kinds of things that literally can change the entire direction of not only that particular person's life, but the lives of people with whom that person comes into contact.
Right.
What kind of a husband would that person become?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a friend would that person become? What kind of a parent is that person going to become? And who feels the residual effect of the pain and helplessness that person had to deal with at some point in their life, you know? So people need to really appreciate, man, that when things happen to a person, it's not just happening. It's not happening in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have ramifications for other people who will eventually encounter that person.
Well said. Well said. Judge, anything else we want to share before we go? Anything else in the courthouse you want to share? You know, I know it's campaign season down there. Everybody's a lot of folks running for office.
A lot of running going on. Well, this is what I want to say, man. I want to say to you and to 103 over the last, 3 days or thereabouts,
mm-hmm.
I think you have really presented some tremendous radio. You've presented some tremendous opportunities for people to hear and to judge for themselves hot issues that are been going on in the community.
Thank you.
You've given people an opportunity to express themselves. You've asked some masterful questions, some wonderful
wow.
questions of those people to be able to flesh out the particulars of those issues. And this is the value of local radio, and this is the value of not just local radio, because we got that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got local radio, stations. This is the value of a local radio station investing in the idea that we're not going to just, you know, devolve into the lowest common denominator, but we're going to try to present people with facts and issues and things that are affecting their lives from day to day in such a way that they get the opportunity to make decisions about what they think of those issues. This is what local radio, community radio, it should really be about. And I think you did a wonderful job with Art Duran and Keith and Lewis and you had DJ Hilson there yesterday. That's what people need. People need to hear that. They need to hear from these people when they are involved in the kinds of things that have been transpiring over this period of time.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you. And I thank you for it.
Wow. Thank you for your comments. That's reaffirming, because sometimes you never know, you know, well, maybe putting on music is better. You know, maybe, you know,
it's easy.
It's easier to do that.
It's absolutely easier. But, you know, you can't eat. You can't eat ice cream every day, all day.
Right.
You know, at some point you need something of substance that's going to nourish you and nurture you and help you to grow stronger. And in this case, to grow more knowledgeable and more informed, you know.
And on another note, I saw a picture of you festering the park parade.
Okay.
See,
I just said all those nice things
about you,
man. But
it was a good picture. It was a good picture, Judd. It was a very good picture.
I take it all back, man.
I mean, it was a very good picture. You were stepping.
Yeah.
You were stepping.
I don't know if I would call that stepping. I was epping.
You were stepping. You were representing. Was Harold Wright and all them out there?
Harold wasn't out with us. I think Harold had another engagement going on during that time, but just about most of the old bros were out there and had some of the new guys. They were stepping.
Okay. Okay.
They had their boots on and they were, you know, they put down a little hop for the people.
You guys, y'all practice or?
Oh man.
You don't need to. You don't need to practice. You're that good. I feel you. Well, you good.
Well, I tell you now, back in the day.
Uh-huh.
Back in the day, MSU diaper show, baby. But those days are long and far away.
Wow. Well, I appreciate it. Matter of fact, your wife just said something to you on Facebook. She said, great job, honey.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Thank you, PA, for serving the community. Thank you, Sister K.
Yeah, my 1978 Muskegon Big Red grad. Finest thing in that class. Without a doubt. Thank you, sweetie.
Right. Judge, you got on Georgetown today. Georgetown Medicine.
Oh, man, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, bro. I know it got to mean something.
It means something to me. Yeah, my niece graduated from Georgetown Medical School.
Wow.
This 3 weeks ago, we went out to D.C. for her graduation. Okay. Dr. Tiffany Pittman.
Wow. Yeah. Is she from here, Judge?
Well, no. She grew up in Baltimore.
Okay.
She grew up in Baltimore, but that's my second oldest brother's oldest daughter.
Now, which brother?
Vern. Yeah.
Wow. Now, he grew up here.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wow. Oh, yeah. So his daughter is
class 72, height 72.
72. Yeah. His daughter has a doctor's degree in medicine. She's an MD.
Yes, she's going to be an anesthesiologist, and she's doing her residency at Rush Hospitals or Medical Center in Chicago.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. Be proud of her.
So I got some Georgetown medical gear. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Yeah,
man.
I saw that. I mean,
glad to be able to talk about that.
Only time you rep state and Indiana. That's all I ever see you on with.
Whenever I wear something, there's some significance. There's something happening there.
Right.
That I've been a part of.
So what is it going to take for you to put on the Michigan?
A full ride scholarship
for your daughter,
for my daughter or my son. And even then,
you did, huh? Right.
I was just in Ann Arbor, man.
Oh, really?
I was just there last Thursday.
Okay.
What a beautiful town and what a waste of real estate, man. What a waste. What a tremendous waste, man. All that
you know, you know you're envious of that now. Come on, Judge. That campus is beautiful.
Where is the campus?
It's all over. You were
exactly.
In it. It's everywhere.
Where is it?
The whole city. The whole city.
As opposed to Michigan State,
mm-hmm.
where there is an entire area devoted as campus.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go across the street, you're right. off campus.
Right.
When you come back across the street, you're on campus.
It's not like
that. That makes sense, man. Not, you know, you got Michigan thing here and then. Oh, no, that's not on campus. That's not part of the Michigan campus. Come on, man.
It's growing so big because people from all over the world want to come there, Judge. They lining up.
Well, I know. Well, then, you know, you should have devoted enough real estate to U of M. You know, like, I mean, we still got room in East Lansing for, you know, much more. And we're a bigger campus now. Don't get it twisted. Don't get it twisted. You could set U of M in Michigan State's campus and still have room now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you know that. The school, though, U of M. And I know you was there just wishing, like, wow. What it was, life would have been like.
Actually, man, I
probably would have been Obama cabinet now.
Let's keep the record straight. I turned them down.
You turned them down.
They accepted me, and I said no.
You said no, Judge?
Yeah.
Wow, you turned to Michigan for real?
Yes, absolutely.
My goodness.
Nah, not the law school. No.
I'm going to say Judge.
Undergrad, yeah, right. But not the law school.
All right. Well, thanks, Judge, for being here, as always. Any plans next week? Any plans you got coming up you want to share?
No, I can't think of anything of any.
Not speaking nowhere?
Oh, well, Saturday. I'm sorry, the 23rd,
mm-hmm.
this Saturday, at the offices of the United Way. Myself and Commissioner Eric Hood
mm-hmm.
are going to be speaking to a group of young men on behalf of the Church of the Living God. It's headed up by my sister-in-law, Tawana Brown,
okay.
who has organized this to talk about issues of legal issues that would affect young people in our community. It's going to be a really good event. To talk about those things.
Mm.
Yeah, that's coming up at 10:00, 10 and 10 a.m. to I think 1 p.m. at the United Way offices. And I forget the address.
Are you going to be at the celebration for Mayor Wormington next week, Tuesday?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I have the highest respect for Steve Wormington and how he has been an advocate for this entire community. You know, obviously people don't agree with everything anybody does. You
right.
know, nobody's 100%, but
right.
man, that guy loved Muskegon, worked yeah. hard for Muskegon.
Right.
I really appreciated how he stepped up when we put the call out to try and deal with some of this gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he stepped up and I don't think he missed a meeting.
Nah,
and then eventually took on the leadership right. Of that that effort, man. So wherever they're celebrating Steve Wormington, I'm going to be right there celebrating with him. Yep.
All right.
He's a good man.
All right. Before we go, Patrice Johnson made sure she weighed in. She's a Spartan, too.
Oh, yeah. The
people lining up to go to state. She won't let me know that.
Only the best. Only the best. Where is the U of M representative on the city council or on the...
They all at Harvard. They all at Washington,
they
D.C.
They all out. Okay. Well, then we rest our case.
They all in science labs.
Yeah, yeah. If they're in Washington, D.C. with what's going on out there, I rest my case.
But if you look at President Obama, and I know you love President Obama.
Absolutely.
Look at his lot of his choices. A lot of them have University of Michigan ties.
Yeah, well, you know what?
And he's a brilliant man, isn't he?
He is an absolute brilliant man, but somebody got into his cabinet, and they giving him some bad advice when he keeps going out and hiring these U of M people. You get him a couple Spartans on this hookup.
I was gonna say a joke. I'll wait till we get off air. I was gonna say something.
Go ahead.
We might have a scandal going on.
Yeah, but we're gonna have a good time.
It's a good time.
We're gonna have a good time.
Right. All right, Joe. Thank you. It's been nice, man.
Thank you, man.
All right.
All right.
It's the Judge Show with Judge Pittman. Judge Pittman on WUVS 103.7 The Beat. Broadcasting live from the Mason Wright Media Center. WUVS-LP 103.7 Muskegon, Muskegon Heights.
Hi, I'm...